Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the presentation of Umicore's full year results for 2013. I will talk about the overall business evolution over the last year, and then I will hand over to Filip, our CFO, who will cover the financials. After that, I will comment on the outlook for this year before turning the call over to you for any questions that you might have. If we look first at the overview of the year, we can see that overall, revenues were slightly down year-on-year. The main reason behind the lower revenues being the effect of lower metal prices, which started to be felt in the second quarter and became more pronounced in the second half of the year. Metal prices do not impact revenues only. As you know, they also have an impact on the profitability of our various recycling activities, and this was the main reason for a lower recurring EBIT in 2013. We also had a somewhat less favorable mix in catalysis, as well as higher costs related to the startup of new facilities and the introduction of new products, both of which having a temporary impact on profitability. On the other hand, we have seen some clear benefits coming through from the difficult but necessary cost reduction measures that we have implemented over the past 18 months. We are also starting to see the margins in energy materials improving from the lows of 2012. Our Vision 2015 investment programs remain very much on track, and we continue to make a high level of investment in the various growth initiatives, both in terms of capital expenditures and research and development spending. Although the economic downturn has made conditions tough in some of our end markets, the overall trends that support the strategic direction remain very much intact, and some of the investments that we have recently made, for example, in heavy-duty catalysis and rechargeable battery materials, should start contributing in 2014. Filip will comment on the financials in more detail in a moment. Suffice to say for now that our financial position remains very solid. Once again, we generated strong cash flows, and despite significant capital expenditures, we were able to return more cash to the shareholders in the form of share buybacks and dividend payments. On the subject of dividends, the board of directors yesterday chose to maintain the dividend at the level of 1 euro per share, and this will be proposed to the shareholders at the next AGM at the end of April. In terms of revenue generation, I mentioned that there were a couple of factors at play in 2013. The first and most obvious was the effect of lower prices for precious and specialty metals on the revenues of the recycling activities. This was particularly the case in the second half of the year. Elsewhere, we recorded generally higher sales volumes and revenues in the product-related businesses, with activity levels picking up somewhat in a number of business units in the course of the year. From a profitability point of view, the lower metal prices were the main reason behind recurring EBITDA decreasing 12% year-on-year, with the impact of this evolution being felt most in the second half of the year. We also experienced a less supportive mix in catalysis, with the volume growth in the automotive market coming mostly from outside Europe, or in other words, from regions where emission requirements may be somewhat less stringent than in Europe, or where the engine mix may be less attractive. In catalysis, we also had a number of growth investments come on stream in the second half, and efforts were stepped up to introduce new products, which led to a temporary inflation of the cost base. Of course, when we add new production or testing facilities, these also carry depreciation charges, and we saw depreciation charges increase by some 7 million euro following recent investments, which was the reason why our group's recurring EBIT was down compared to last year, a bit more in percentage terms than EBITDA was. Overall, the return on capital employed stood at close to 14% last year, which is somewhat below the lower end of our desired range of 15%-20%, yet above the cost of capital. Clearly, the contribution of the recycling business group was lower than in the prior year, and mathematically speaking, this explains to a large degree the decrease in the group's profitability year-on-year. This being said, although metal prices were less favorable, the returns in the recycling business remained very strong at well above 50% and clearly the best you will find in the industry. It is in the other business groups that we are facing the most pressing challenges and most pressing need to restore profitability to bring it back above the cost of capital, while at the same time we engaged high level of growth investments to enable long-term success. This will continue to be a delicate balancing act, and I'm confident that many of the building blocks are now in place to start paying back on the investments we have made. If we look a bit more closely on the investments that we made in 2013 itself, you will see that capital expenditure reached €280 million. This was higher than in 2012, with the vast majority of investments going to Vision 2015 growth projects. The increase in catalysis relates to the addition of light-duty and heavy-duty production capabilities in Asia and Europe, and the construction of technology development centers in Japan and Brazil. The increase in energy materials is linked to the new production capabilities in rechargeable battery materials, while in recycling we have a series of investments underway at the Hoboken plant, like the second phase of the sampling capacity expansion, and we are also increasing the silver recycling capabilities in Germany and Thailand. CapEx was stable in performance materials, and the investments in this business group tend to be rather more selective and less weighty than in the other business groups. R&D spending in absolute terms was somewhat lower than in 2012, although the level of spend as a percentage of revenues was quite stable. The main reason for the lower level of spending was that a number of key R&D initiatives, such as heavy-duty diesel catalysts, are now moving into commercialization phase, and the costs connected with their introduction are no longer considered as R&D. Also, the net spending level went down a bit because we received a higher level of external research grants than in 2012. I talked a little about the various changes that we have made to our industrial configuration in the course of 2013, and this is also reflected in the changing number of employees. You can see that the total number of employees decreased by 387 compared to a year earlier, with roughly half of that number coming in the fully consolidated companies and primarily the result of the measures that we have taken in the energy materials and performance materials business groups. The decrease in associated companies comes from the restructuring in Element 6 Abrasives, and in particular the closure of its production site in China. In terms of safety, I had hoped I could focus today on the performance of 2013, which showed a very substantial improvement in terms of both accident frequency and severity rates. The sad reality, though, is that several years of continued improvement has been overshadowed by the tragic accident in Orlen 2 weeks ago, in which two of our employees lost their lives. We have conducted an analysis of the likely causes of the accident and have submitted our preliminary conclusions to the authorities. Let's take now a look at each of the business groups in turn, starting with catalysis. Revenues in catalysis were up slightly. In automotive catalysts, revenues followed a similar trend to that of global automotive production, which was up by a few percentage points last year. We recorded good volume growth outside Europe, and this, coupled with the positive effects of the consolidation of the Umicore Shokubai activities, more than offset the effect of lower pass-through costs that were largely the result of a lower rare earth component in the revenues. As I mentioned, sales grew strongly in most of the non-European markets, particularly in China, where we had another very strong year. On balance, though, this growth profile presented a less favorable regional mix than in previous years, as Europe, with its high percentage of diesel vehicles and stringent emission norms, is the market that demands the most complex catalyst solutions and commands the highest premiums. Our product mix was also somewhat less favorable due to last year's specific platform exposure, both in Europe and North America. In precious metals chemistry, we also generated higher sales volumes, but the overall revenue generation and performance was also affected by an adverse mix effect with lower sales to the life science sector. In both business units, we had to bear the higher costs associated with the bringing new production infrastructure and technologies on stream, and this was one of the main reasons why overall profitability of the business group was somewhat lower in the second half of the year. You can see that we have a big wave of investments underway in automotive catalysts across the globe. Last year, we added new production capabilities for heavy-duty diesel in Europe, and actually we're installing a third production line in Florange as we speak to match the demand from contracts that we had secured in previous periods. In China, the construction of the HDD facility is nearing completion. We are also adding new production capabilities in the existing plant in South Korea and are building a new plant in India, which is set to be inaugurated later this year. We have completed the construction of new technology development centers in Brazil and Japan. And in precious metals chemistry, we are now in the final stage of moving the production to a hub in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Actually, that is on the same site as our automotive catalyst production. And the new precious metals chemistry plant should help us improve our competitive position in the U.S. market for precious metals compounds. In energy materials, the main engine for the 10% revenue growth was a significantly higher level of sales volumes in the rechargeable battery materials business. The trend that we have seen in previous periods continued, with global sales of high-end portable electronics showing significant growth. Umicore has developed a range of high-energy density materials that are ideal for this type of application, and our sales have grown accordingly. If we look at the sales of NMC compounds, the increase was driven mainly by the steady increase in sales for batteries used in electrified vehicle platforms. Here, we continue to be successful in securing new business linked to electrified vehicle models that will be introduced to the market in the coming years. In the cobalt and specialty materials business, revenues were higher with increased sales volumes, particularly of products used in chemical applications, more than compensating for the pressure on premiums that we continue to feel in most markets. The revenues of thin film products were boosted by a pickup in demand for rotary ITO targets, that is, those targets that are used in the production of flat panel displays, while in electro-optic materials, the market conditions remained particularly challenging in germanium optics, while we observed a further deterioration in the market for terrestrial photovoltaic applications. The overall profitability of the business group is recovering from the lows that we have seen in the second half of 2012. This is due, on one hand, to improving demand in certain new applications, and, on the other hand, due to the cost reductions that have been achieved in electro-optic materials and thin film products. As you can see on slide 13, we have been very busy adding capacity in the rechargeable battery materials operations in South Korea, as well as in China, and our new precursor plant in Korea is now entering a phase of production trials. In cobalt and specialty materials, we have completed the upgrade of the nickel recycling and refining operations in Olen, Belgium, and we are also working on an upgrade and expansion of the fine cobalt powders production at the same site. As you will have read, At the end of last year, we completed an acquisition in the U.S., which will give us a stronger platform for growth in the plating chemical segment in North America. In performance materials, revenues were stable compared to those of 2012. The profitability of the fully consolidated activities has improved slightly as a result of various cost reduction measures, while the contribution from Element 6 Abrasives was lower year on year. Market conditions remain challenging in most industry segments, particularly in building products and technical materials. In zinc chemicals, revenues were stable compared to 2012, but the overall performance of the business was down due to the adverse impact of a low zinc price and the scarcity of residues for recycling from the galvanizing industry. Electroplating, on the other side, continued to perform very well and was able to offset some pressure on premiums through higher volumes. The balance between selective investments and footprint adjustments in performance materials is somewhat different than what you would see in the other business groups of Umicore. In zinc chemicals, the recent closure of the plant in Australia will be compensated by a capacity increase at the Malaysian operations, while the longer-term growth in Asia will also be supported by the new plant that is planned to come on stream in China in 2015. In building products, we are supporting the growth in the most promising subsegment through the new production line for surface-treated products in the south of France, while at the same time reducing costs globally. Finally, in Element 6 Abrasives, the new innovation center was opened in Oxford last year and is already demonstrating its value to the business, while the market presence in lower-end products has been somewhat reduced and the advanced materials facility in China has now been closed. In recycling, we saw recurring EBIT come in at 200 million euro, corresponding to a return on capital employed of 58%, or in other words, a very strong showing again. We did see revenues and earnings start to come down in the second half of 2013 as a result of the lower metal prices. The effect of lower metal prices was mitigated to a certain extent by the price levels that we had locked in previous periods. As you know, however, many specialty metals cannot be hedged, and in the second half of last year, the decline in prices for metals such as selenium, tellurium, ruthenium, or iridium was very pronounced. While fluctuations in metal prices can have a strong influence on the results over the short term, the long-term performance in recycling is fundamentally driven by the availability of industrial residues and recyclable materials. In that respect, I'm pleased to say that we further increased the intake of industrial byproducts from the world's non-ferrous metal producers in the course of the year, and also were successful in securing additional supply streams for the future. In end-of-life materials, which make up around a quarter of our input by volume, the intake was lower. In electronic scrap, volumes were slightly lower, while the mix was better than in the prior year as a result of the strong position we have developed in the high end of this segment. Arrivals of spent automotive catalysts were also lower year on year, and the competitive pressure on margins in that subsegment has been such that we have partly turned to more attractive raw materials. The lower gold and silver prices also reduced the availability of residues and scrap for recycling from the jewelry industry, and the refining and the recycling operations in jewelry and industrial metals business unit was affected. This business unit also saw rather flat sales of materials both for industrial and decorative applications. Market conditions for precious metals management were also somewhat less favorable given lower metal prices and a somewhat reduced level of volatility. After catalysis, recycling is the division where we are investing the most in terms of capital expenditure, as you know. The lion's share of these investment projects is happening at the Hoboken plant, and we are finalizing the most recent wave of peripheral investments that will allow us to debottleneck the operations and make us ready to increase the throughput of materials. As we communicated in October last year, we have a plan to invest 100 million euro in Hoboken over the course of the next 2 years, with the aim to increase capacity by some 40%. We are also investing elsewhere in the division, for example, in the expansion of the silver refining and recycling capabilities in Thailand and Germany. At this stage, I would like to hand over to Philippe, who will comment on the financials.
Thank you, Mark, and good afternoon to everybody. If we first look at the non-recurring EBIT of minus 43 million euros, you can see that the one-off effects of the various footprint adjustments and cost reduction initiatives were the most significant effect, accounting for some 31 million euros of restructuring charges. The balance of the non-recurring result mainly comes from provisions linked to ongoing environmental remediation of historic pollution. The impact on our net result of these non-recurring items was minus 39 million euros. Moving to the cash flows, you can see that they remained very strong in 2013. The cash flow from operations, which includes the changes in working capital, was even up by nearly 9% to 523 million euros. The drop in metal prices helped to free up close to 100 million euros of working capital in 2013. As anticipated, the level of tax that we paid out in cash returned to a more normalized level compared to 2012, which benefited also our cash flow. It is worth pointing out that from a P&L perspective, our recurring effective tax rate did move up, as we had indicated, albeit at a more moderate pace. As Mark mentioned, 2013 was a year of significant investments. Next to the 280 million spent on capital expenditures, we also acquired Palm Commodities at the end of the year. And all these factors combined, we still generated 24% higher net cash flows before financing than last year. Umicore's board will propose a stable full-year dividend of 1 euro per share for approval by our shareholders, and based on our recurring 2013 EPS, which is close to 2 euros per share, this corresponds to a payout ratio of over 50% and implies a gross yield of more than 3% based on yesterday's closing price. In 2013, we bought back some 2.4 million of our own shares, which accounts to close to 85 million of cash return. Together with the dividends paid out in 2013, this means that we returned close to 40% of our cash flow from operations back to our shareholders. We currently hold about 8.5% of our shares in treasury, leaving us the headroom of approximately 1.8 million shares under our current 10% buyback authorization. Putting all cash elements together, you can see that high investments and cash returns did not prevent us from bringing debt levels down further in 2013. We moved from 222 million euros at the end of last year, the end of 2012 that is, to 250 million euros at the end of December. This level of net debt is indicative of a strong capital structure and corresponds to less than half our recurring EBITDA and a net gearing ratio of 11%. We took the opportunity of low market rates to further reduce our weighted average net interest rate to 1.6% over 2013, resulting in lower net interest paid. And in addition, we also increased the amount of committed credit lines through a new syndicated loan. Mark, I hand it back to you for the outlook.
Thank you, and thank you, Philippe. And before turning to questions, I would now like to elaborate on the outlook statements that were released this morning. Although there are still many question marks about macroeconomic factors in general and a lot of moving parts in our specific end markets, I think it's appropriate to give you an indication of overall direction, considering, of course, current market conditions. In recycling, you are all aware that lower metal prices lead to lower results. And the good news is that higher metal price leads to higher results also. And that we have a lower degree of prices locked in for this year. This means that if current metal prices persist, earnings would be lower in the recycling business group than in 2013, as actually I already mentioned during the last call at the end of October. We do, however, see that the supply environment remains positive, and this is a better long-term barometer for the business than the short-term metal price environment. In catalysis, we should start to see revenues and performance increase as we move from a phase of product development and introduction to a phase of sales ramp-up in the markets for Euro 6 light and heavy-duty catalysts. On top of that, we should continue to see decent level of growth in both China and North America. In performance materials, there are currently no signs of any significant changes in the demand patterns in the various end markets. I do, however, anticipate that margins should improve somewhat as the cost reduction measures in activities such as building products and zinc chemicals start to have an effect. In energy materials, I anticipate further growth in sales volumes in rechargeable battery materials and a gradual recovery in some of the other end markets. If we group these together, we can see that we anticipate a recovery in the end market for many of Umicore's products. It's been a challenging period for many business units, not least for those activities that have had to contend with difficult market conditions while at the same time investing to secure significant future growth opportunities. Although market confidence remains fragile, we are moving into a delivery phase for these businesses, and the more sustainable cost base we have put in place in some activities will make these activities more competitive. All in all, if metal prices persist at their current levels, though, this will mean lower earnings in recycling. And on balance, this means that the full-year recurring EBIT could end up slightly below the level of 2013, again, if current metal prices do persist through the rest of this year. So, with that, I would like now to open the floor to your questions.
Thank you. To ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach your equipment. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question. We'll now take our first question from Mutlu Gundogan from ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Two questions on recycling and also two questions on the catalysis, please. The first on recycling is, can you explain to me why your EBITDA margin of 43% in the second half was higher than the 41% you achieved in the first half, especially considering the drop in metal prices? And then secondly on recycling, you mentioned the increased competition for industrial byproducts. Can you share with us in which particular segments or geographies you are seeing this? And then moving on to catalysis, the share of diesel cars produced in Europe stabilized at around 45%. If I'm not mistaken, there was around 43% in the third quarter. So does this mean that it has increased quarter on quarter, and should we take that as an assumption for 2014? And then finally, my question on catalysis is, can you provide some details on the two HDD plants that are already producing and the third one that will come on stream at the end of 2014? What is the capacity of your plant, or how many units can it produce on a full-year basis? Thank you.
Okay, so let me start with the first question was relating to the EBITDA margins in recycling. Well, to be frank, this is not a measure that is the most used or the most relevant to assess the performance of the recycling business units, because there are too many factors that can influence the top line and the EBITDA lines. And actually, we look at the return on capital employed, which is so I don't have a particular explanation to the question that you raised, because this is not how we measure the performance of the business. That's the EBITDA margin is a typical margin for a product business, but it doesn't work so well in a recycling environment where you make the margins on the supply side and not on the sales side of your flow sheet. Then in terms of competitive landscape evolution, it is mostly in the recyclable materials, in the end-of-life materials, that the competition continued to increase. I mentioned already last year that the segment for spent automotive catalyst had turned, less attractive than in the past because of increased competition from other refiners and PGM producers themselves. And this continued to be the case in the course of last year and continues to be the case today. In electronic scrap, we also see some increased competition, and this is no surprise given the capacity expansions that we have seen in the market and that have by far exceeded the evolution of supply of such end-of-life materials. This being said, our mix continues to evolve very positively. We are extremely well positioned in the high end of this segment, which in terms of recycling for Umicore means the segment of the most complex raw materials. In the industrial byproducts segment, there is continued competition, and there I would say we continue to improve our position. We continue to increase the intake of raw materials, and at the same time, as I mentioned, we're able to secure additional residue streams for the future, and that bodes well as we intend on expanding our capacity. Moving to catalysis, I'm not going to give you any quantified idea of the capacity that we have in the two plants. Suffice to say that we are building capacity in line with the contracts that we have secured. That's one of the beauties of the catalyst business, is that you know in advance which platform you're being awarded, and so you can plan and manage your capacities accordingly. And indeed, the third line that we are installing in Europe is also meant to cover the demand that was the business that was awarded to us previously, and that is secured on a contractual basis. And the same is valid in China. And sorry, there was a second question in catalysis, and I didn't have the time to write it.
It was on the share of diesel. It looks like it was higher in Q4 than the 45% you mentioned for the second half. I was wondering if it's indeed the case, and if that's a number we should take going forward.
Yeah, I have to say that I don't know if that's a number you have to take going forward in your projections. You know from previous discussions that I'm a firm believer in diesel, in the sense that diesel is a CO2-friendly alternative to gas engines, so you need to maintain a decent proportion of diesel in the mix if we are to meet the CO2 requirements and regulations that the European Union in particular has enacted. This being said, from one quarter to the other, the demand and the proportion of diesel in the mix is changing. Sometimes it's distorted by subsidy mechanisms. Sometimes it is distorted by change in taxes on the various qualities of fuel. And so it's difficult, I would say, to extrapolate from shorter-term evolutions. And my belief is that diesel will continue to be an important factor in the mix as Europe pursues aggressive CO2 reduction targets. But unfortunately, I cannot tell you more than that.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Evgenia Moldavova from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks a lot. I have three questions. The first one is on volumes in recycling. As far as I understand, you were saying that you already reached maximum capacity in recycling, and hence that's why you are increasing capacity and adding 40%. and within the next 2 years, the capacity also will be capacity utilization will be limited by the fact that you will have to do additional shutdowns in order to add capacity. So this incremental contract that you signed for new industrial residues, does it mean that it's signed for 2 years in advance and you will be able to treat these volumes when you are done with adding capacity? The second question is on catalysis. You said that unfavorable mix affected your profitability plus startup costs. I understand Europe versus U.S. I was just wondering, besides the fact that European market is much weaker than the U.S. market in autos at the moment, did you have any changes in your contracts with auto suppliers that you are now producing more gasoline cars and supplying more gasoline platforms and less diesel platforms? And your HDD plant, again, I thought, when do you expect in HDD business to become break-even? And the last one on environmental permits for the capacity increase. Do you need to get those, or because it's at the same facilities, you don't need to get any additional environmental permits? Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, maybe I'll take the first question on the capacity. So indeed, we've been able to increase our contract portfolio on the industrial byproducts. Now, there's always a mix, as you know, and changes in mix between recyclables and byproducts. So it's very difficult to basically relay one to another and then to the capacity. So we see a fundamental growth in the market that's, again, confirmed by contract wins, and that's why we are contemplating the capacity increase.
Okay. It's just, is it possible for you to grow volumes within meaningfully within next 2 years in recycling?
It is possible, but it's difficult to quantify that or to be more precise at this stage because, as I mentioned last year, we ahead of the shutdown last year, we are carrying out all of the modifications and the heavy investment programs during the regular maintenance shutdowns. And so it remains to be seen how long the shutdown will take such that we can carry out the investment, because we don't want to disrupt our production outside of the maintenance shutdowns. And secondly, it remains to be seen how the facility restarts afterwards. So it's difficult to predict in this time of in these times of very significant changes in the production equipment and configuration, it is a bit difficult to predict how capacity will be, what capacity will be available and how it can be utilized. But I would say, yes, the hope is that we can indeed take advantage in the short run already of some available capacity increases. But that remains to be confirmed once we have carried out the shutdown and see how the facility restarts. Now let me move to your other question on the catalysis mix. Yes, one component, you're right, is the geographical mix, with the growth in regions, first of all, where the catalyst solutions are not necessarily as sophisticated and or do not necessarily command the same premiums, plus the fact that outside of Europe you have hardly any diesel or meaningful diesel penetration. Secondly, in our own mix, yes, there is a temporary effect with a bit less diesel than previously and a bit more gasoline, so that's been unfavorable, and this is probably of a temporary nature. In terms of the heavy-duty break-even, I'm not commenting really on break-even. Suffice to say or to confirm that we are moving into a ramp-up phase, and that the revenue that we will start generating as we ramp up the business in the course of this year, and more particularly in the second half of this year, will contribute both to the top and the bottom line of the business. And as I mentioned, indeed, this will be more visible in the second half than in the first half. And in terms of permits, permitting, we need all permits for the usual permits for the capacity expansion in Hoboken, and that is work in process. And as we mentioned in October, we hope that this will be finalized somewhere in the second quarter of this year, early in the second quarter of this year.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Wim Hoste from KBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a couple of questions on energy materials. Maybe first on rechargeable battery materials. Can you elaborate on the level of price competition in the various segments? I assume it's pretty intense in the notebook segment, the NMC segment for notebooks, but can you comment also on how it is developing in the other segment, the lithium cobalt diodes for high-end portable electronics? And then also you mentioned additional contract wins in automotive applications. Can you maybe elaborate on how many additional contracts you have won for cars hitting the road, when, what's your future market share in that business, and also whether the contracts are dual sourcing or single sourcing? Thank you.
Okay, maybe the first question, Wim, on price competition. So as we mentioned, I think what we see is on the, let's say, the lower value segments of the NMC materials, so basically things going into laptops, etc., that there the price competition and the competition level in general is high and remains high. But that clearly, as you know, we focus mostly on the high premium segment, which is the high energy density kind of material, and there we're talking for applications like the high-end phones and the tablets. We're talking the LCO material, and there, because we're still in the lead in terms of technology and we clearly have an advantage versus other materials, pricing power remains good. But overall, obviously, as you know, it's a very competitive segment indeed. In automotive applications, we do not specify on specific contract wins, but overall, you know, we indicated before we had more than 15 basically platforms where we had in our portfolio. We continue to increase that, and I think what's most important that we see that those contract wins basically go in the direction of our material, which is the high-end NMC material, which is still the technology of choice more and more in the market.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Rakesh Patel from Goldman Sachs.
Hi, just a couple of questions, if I could. First of all, I wondered if you could talk about the supply mix that you're seeing in the recycling business, because I know previously you talked about you'd optimized the mix, and I wondered if that had deteriorated slightly or indeed had started to improve since the beginning of the year. And then secondly, I just wondered if you could give us some steer on what we should expect from palm commodities in terms of EBIT this year, just so we can put your guidance into some context. That would be great. Thank you very much.
Let me start with the supply mix. I mean, we continue to focus on optimizing the mix, so that's by definition, that's the way we work. We are selective and take the most profitable contracts first, and then if there is any spare capacity left, that goes to somewhat less or lower margin products. But I mean, the policy continues to optimize the mix. And it's really difficult to compare the mix from one quarter to the other or from one year to the other, except that in broad terms, I should say that Now we have a slightly lower proportion of end-of-life materials compared to industrial byproducts for reasons I alluded to earlier. The competitive situation having changed in the spent automotive catalyst segment, the fact that there is also more competition in electronic scrap, while our position in industrial byproducts continues to be very strong, and we managed indeed to attract more material. So typically, on average, in the past years, you have seen a proportion of about 75% industrial byproducts, 25% end-of-life materials by volume in the supply mix. We probably have now a little bit less than that in terms of end-of-life materials and a bit more, a bit of a higher proportion of industrial byproducts. And, I mean, this will continue to change one direction or another because it depends on the market conditions and the advantage that we have compared to other players is that we can move from one to the other extremely flexibly and basically optimize our intake in function of the margins that can be obtained in the marketplace.
Yeah, on the Palm acquisition, I mean, I don't think we want to single out really the contribution of the acquisition. What we certainly can say is that the expectation is that it will be earnings accretive certainly this year already. I mean, although this is a relatively small acquisition on the size of Umicore, it's quite important and synergistic for CSM in the U.S. because it gives us a complementary kind of product portfolio. You know, this is a market leader in the segment specifically of the plating industry. We have been relatively late in the market, so we have a lot of complementarities and synergies from a commercial perspective. We have a good commercial team there, and so there should be important synergies for the business going forward. So I would say earnings accretive certainly this year, but not specific.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Junior Kuignitz from Peter Cam.
Hi, yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. I have two questions. The first one is whether you could give us some feeling on how your market share and catalysis evolved in your core markets. And then the second one is, would it be possible to get some flavor to what extent the expansion capex, the expansion projects in energy materials and catalysis are still weighing on the rebates? Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't get the second question. Can you repeat it?
Yeah, sure. Could you give us some flavor to what extent the expansion projects in energy materials and catalysis still weigh on the rebates?
Okay. So market shares in catalysis. I mean that's easy because I can repeat messages that I've given. In the past already, they tend to be fairly stable in the mid to long term, and you have short-term fluctuations that typically depend on how well the platforms that you serve are selling in the marketplace, and typically you should not extrapolate from this type of fluctuations. But overall, market shares tend to be fairly steady over time in that segment. HDD is, of course, a different story because we're a new entrant, so by definition, we are starting from scratch and winning market share. But this being said, since it's a fast-growing segment for the industry, there is growth for everyone, even if one of the players, if one of the recent players is winning market share. And the expansion investments in catalysis and energy materials do weigh quite substantially on the profitability of these two business groups. And you could see that in particular in the results of last year with depreciation charges increasing quite substantially. I mentioned the increase in depreciation charges year on year for the full group in my introductory remarks. And actually, the vast majority, almost all of that was in catalysis alone, given the significant level of investment there. So that continues to be the case, and the good news is that while we continue to invest fairly significantly in those two business groups, and we continue to do so in 2014, so which will continue to add depreciation charges, at last we will see contribution from the most recent investments that we have made there, as I mentioned earlier too.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Adam Collins of Liberum.
Yeah, good afternoon. I had a couple of financial questions and a couple of operating. So on the financial side, Philippe, you alluded to the fact that the tax rate moved up slightly less than you guided to in the second half. And I wondered if you could tell us what your best guess at this stage is for 2014 now. And then on the acquisition spend, the statements are showing 22 million euro acquisition spend net of cash. I wondered if you could say to what extent, how much of that very roughly relates to the Palm acquisition. And I would have thought it's kind of lion's share. That's the two financial questions. I'll move on to the operating once that's done. Thank you.
So on the tax, I mean, you're right, and I know you repeatedly ask the question to have guidance on the tax rate. We try to do it as good as possible. So I think you saw an increase, and again, we're talking about the recurring effective tax rate. We saw an increase as expected, a bit lower than that what was guided towards at least half year, which was about mid-20s. I think it's really a combination of mixed effects. You saw there's also quite a lot of non-recurring elements, obviously, that also have somewhat of an impact on tax, can have an impact on the ETR. So it's really a mix of things which makes it, I mean, the fact that in Belgium, for example, we have used up our tax credits and are moving to a situation where we are paying more and more taxes, which makes it relatively difficult to really be very specific in terms of forecast, but the trend is there, and I would say the best guess for this year, I would again repeat the guidance, which is for the mid-20s.
Right.
And to be honest, we try not to look at it as a problem to have a lower tax rate than what we guided to, but let's say for this year, mid-20s is the best guidance we give.
Right, okay. And I think you said high 20s previously.
No, well, let's say mid-20s was the short-term guidance, and indeed the longer-term, you're right, was that we go, basically the theoretic tax rate that we have is about 30.
Yeah.
So typically as we will move out of the tax credits, we will move closer to the 30, but that will be, let's say, will not happen overnight. That's going to be a process of, we expect, a number of years. So let's say mid-20s for this year, and then a gradual increase going to the 30%.
Okay.
On the POM acquisition, it's fair to say that the amount that you have, the 22 million, is basically related to the POM acquisition.
Okay, thank you. So on the operating side, I think, Mark, you mentioned the fact that you're making investments in new capacity in catalysis in Korea and China in the prepared comments. Korea and India. On the Korea side, can I just check, is that light duty or is that heavy duty?
That's light duty.
Light duty for Korea, okay.
And the other one as well.
Yeah. And you also mentioned that you're switching some capacity now back from NMC in consumer to lithium cobaltite, partly because you're standing away from the competitive low end of the consumer market, and partly given the strong growth that's been seen in smartphones and tablets, which are power hungry. I wondered if you could just talk a little bit more about that trend and to what extent you think that's going to be a value driver for your business in consumer?
Well, actually, the way we run the capacity is that we optimize the utilization of the existing capacity. Of course, we don't want to build the capacity too quickly or too early before the attractive markets or the demand is there. And we fill the existing capacity with the most attractive contracts and products, and it is clearly the high-density cathode materials for the high-end portable electronics, tablets, smartphones, etc., and for the more demanding grades of NMCs, and that is those going into automotive applications. If there is or if there was spare capacity left, then we would possibly fill that with somewhat less attractive materials going into lower-end electronic applications, but that tends to be less and less the case, in a way. And clearly, with the demand for notebooks decreasing to the detriment of tablets, we have less of a case to be made in favor of these low-grade NMCs, and we have more chances to fill the capacity with the high-end products, indeed.
Okay. And just finally, on the guidance that you gave for lower profits in recycling, to what extent are you assuming a headwind, a sequential deterioration in profit caused by the preparations for the smelter expansion?
I mean, clearly the costs thereof are factored in. This being said, we had also development costs last year and engineering costs last year because a lot of the peripheral investments were done in the course of last year. And I would say the year-on-year main difference between, and I'm not talking about half-year sequential developments, but the full-year comparison, the main difference between the two periods of time will be related or could be related to metal prices. There is a bit more of engineering work in the forecast for this year, but I would say all in all, this is much less of a factor than the metal price, than the potential metal price impact.
Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. Now take our next question from Joe Dewhurst from UBS.
Hello, good afternoon. I'd like to ask three questions. Firstly, just on the Treasury shares, is there any essentially proposal maybe to cancel some of those this year, and essentially, I guess, maybe setting yourself up for more buybacks in future years? And then just on with the 40% expansion in recycling, with looking at sort of international beyond Europe and looking at residues that potentially could come from other geographies, how much confidence do you have in say a step up in say supply from say China or the US, maybe through changes in legislation or better collection of e-scrap? And then just finally, on something that you raised and had quite a lot of discussion about at the Capital Markets Day 3 years ago was on the potential for negative margin recycling and maybe then the push through legislation to try and recover even more metals. Has there been any progress on that and any potential maybe funding for recovering, say, more of the deemed to be critical metals that are maybe being lost in the slag right now? Thank you.
On the Treasury shares, so there's no decision yet on whether or not we would request to cancel the shares because, I mean, we still have about 1.8 million of shares to go, so that gives us a bit of headroom still. So as we get closer to the 10%, obviously, we will make a recommendation. But so today, no clear decision yet.
Yeah. Let me talk about the mix in recycling. And address your question. Actually, today we're sourcing materials from all over the world, be it industrial byproducts or end-of-life materials. So today already, the mix is global, with products coming from all regions, including the two regions that you have mentioned. And it remains, of course, the ambition as we grow capacity to continue to source from all over the world. This is a global operation from a sourcing point of view, and the fact that we process the materials in one location gives us a scale effect and enables us to manage the complexity of a number of residue streams, but it doesn't mean that this is a European business. By far, it is not. And then, indeed, talking about the negative value recycling, this remains on the agenda, and the best example of potential negative value recycling has to do with the spent lithium-ion batteries, and we continue, indeed, to work on that development and to also secure some contracts with car manufacturers as they bring new electrified models to the roads. This being said, industrial scale volumes will only come in a number of years, as I've mentioned in earlier discussions, because it's taking time for this kind of application to penetrate the market in the first place, and secondly, the batteries need to run their course before they can be replaced and recycled. Coming to the other aspect of your question, there aren't significant changes in the legislation in respect of negative value recycling beyond the battery directive that was enacted a couple of years ago, and which will indeed be a supportive factor when sufficient lithium-ion batteries become available for recycling. And secondly, there are no specific subsidies or any specific funding mechanisms that are being put in place in order to promote the negative value recycling, even if it relates to elements that can be critical.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Dennis Lepadatu of Kempen.
Good afternoon. I have a couple of more questions on recycling, and it's mainly in connection with the volume side. If I remember correctly, last year you mentioned that you didn't think you would be able to make up for the volume lost during the additional maintenance shutdowns. I was wondering how you finally managed to make up for that volume, and if we could expect by any chance that we could see further additional volume increases in 2014, because it seems like the bottlenecking is actually filtering through, given the fact that you managed to make up for the volumes in H2. And then on the refining fees, I was wondering if you see any very clear pressure on refining fees on the higher end streams, or because of your edge in refining more complex streams, the fees can still be defended quite strongly. And maybe lastly, on energy materials, you mentioned quite a few times already that the germanium market looks a bit more depressed, and it starts to sound like it's a structural trend. Are you reviewing that business more carefully, or do you think the long-term drivers are still in place, but it will be a more difficult period in the medium term?
Let me start with the first question. And actually, what I said last time is that I had to reserve my answer because I needed to see first how the smelter and the plant would work after the and at what rate it would operate after the last shutdown and the last series of modifications that we made. And obviously, as you are pointing out, some of the benefits of the most recent wave of investments are already filtering through. For the future, I have to give you the same answer as the one I gave previously. I have to reserve my response because, again, we will be carrying out significant modifications, and I need to see how these work once we restart the facility, and whether that means immediate additional capacity. And as I mentioned, since we are well supplied and have a supportive supply environment, if there is additional capacity coming from the or the first effect of additional capacity from the debottlenecking, yes, we will make use of that. But today, I'm not in a position to confirm it. Coming to the margins, the refining fees, yes, we are successful in defending or refining fees in the most complex segments or sub-segments of the supply streams, and where it's more competitive, as I mentioned, for instance, in automotive catalysts, the spent automotive catalysts, the margins would be under pressure, and we try to optimize the mixes we have always done. Now, of course, one of the important elements of the recycling margins is the metal prices, and and today things are not looking as favorable as they did a year ago or 18 months ago. Last of your three questions was regarding the germanium market, and I would say I tend to share your observation that the problems that we have in the germanium market look like structural issues, and I'm not today I'm not entirely comfortable or optimistic that these can be easily fixed, and indeed structural solutions may have to be looked at.
Okay. Can I have a follow-up, if you don't mind, on the volume side? If you look at your guidance, what is your underlying assumption in terms of volumes for the current qualitative guidance that you provide?
Sorry? The volumes in what?
The underlying assumption on volumes that you use when providing the current guidance for 2014.
Suffice to say at this stage that I only wanted to provide some indication of direction. I think it's too early to go into any more level of granularity. So that's really too early. There are too many moving parts, and I will provide some more clarity and some more granularity at the end of April, as usual, when we publish the Q1 update, and as usual, a quantified guidance.
Okay, I understand. No problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Mutlu Gundogan of ABN AMRO.
Yes, thank you for taking my follow-up questions. On the CapEx, I found it quite high at 280 million for the year, especially considering the change of definition. I'm wondering, if I look at catalysis and recycling, it looks especially high in those areas. The question is, have you brought any CapEx forward? And if not, what is your guidance for 2014? That's the first question. And the second question is just actually to check, am I correct to understand that you plan two maintenance shutdowns again for 2014, one in the first half and one in the second half? And then finally, in catalysis, I'm guessing you're not willing to share with us what the startup costs in HDD were, but could you at least tell us how long these will continue to weigh on the results? Is that after the last plant in Asia comes online, so the first half of 2015? Thank you.
Yes, on the CapEx, you're right to mention that the majority of the CapEx was in catalysis and in recycling. I think the projects that were behind that are clearly laid out. I mean, we have all the lines, additional lines and tech centers that basically come on stream and that we're working on. In 2013 and will continue 2014. Recycling, you know that we've been basically already preparing the ground with the gas cleaning, the sampling and assaying, the water treatment plant, so there's quite a lot of preparatory investments there. For this year, for 2014, I would say the guidance is certainly that we expect to have a lower CapEx than what we had in 2013. But still, you know that in catalysis, energy materials, and in recycling, that we still have these strategic projects. So CapEx will remain high, but should end lower than 2013.
Let me comment then on the HDD startup costs. I'm not going to quantify them. We're not going into that level of disclosures, as you know us. And there are still going to be costs incurred to support the startup of the business in the course of 2014. That's clear, as I indicated, since we're adding a new line in Europe and we'll be starting up the plant in China. You should expect, indeed, to have still some startup costs and qualification and line qualification costs in the course of this year, maybe a bit more in the first half, but still in the course of this year. This being said, again, the main difference between the 2 years will be the fact that we'll have start to have the contribution from the sales ramp-up for those lines that we have recently been adding.
I think there was a question on the maintenance
shutdown.
Yeah, so the maintenance shutdown, I think the intention, again, it's early days, but the intention is to try and do basically the changes during the maintenance shutdown. So that may be a bit more extended, but the intention is to have one shutdown.
One shutdown in a year?
I mean, this year the intention is to do the changes during the shutdown. Again, it's very early. We still basically need to start with the changes because we first need a permit. But the intention is certainly to do it in one, maybe extended shutdown.
Yeah. Okay. And
again, do not extrapolate too much from that because the duration of the shutdown has yet to be determined, given the number of modifications and the heavy investments that will be carried out at that point in time. So it's not to be
I understand it's still early days. Is there any possibility you could give a little bit more detail on the timing of the shutdown? Would it be in the first half or in the second half? And then what your expectation is, how much longer than your usual shutdown it would take, because you usually don't provide how long a normal shutdown lasts. So would it be double the time or 50%?
Yeah. No, unfortunately, we're not willing to give more information on that subject, first of all, and primarily because the planning is still it's still being done, and the exact quantification of the time needed for the shutdown is still being assessed. No, so I think it wouldn't be reasonable to do that now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Oliver Reif of Deutsche Bank.
Hi there, thanks for taking the question. Just a very quick one on recycling. If current metals prices prevail through 2014 and assuming a similar mix, very crudely, can you give an indication of what you expect the EBIT impact of that to be on the recycling business?
No. Again, as I mentioned earlier, at this time of the year suffice to give some directional guidance, and we will, as usual, come up with some more quantified indications at the end of April when we release our Q1 update, which is typically the time at which we publish a quantified earnings guidance for the full year. There are still too many moving parts this early in the year to enable us to provide a quantified guidance, so no, I cannot do that now.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, so with this last question, I would like to close the conference call now, and thank you very much for your participation. As usual, our team, our investor relations team, will be available to address follow-on questions that you undoubtedly will have, and we will also be meeting with some or hopefully many of you in the coming days as we organize investor and analyst meetings in various locations. So thank you very much, everyone, and have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.